Okay, today we're going to speak about implications of the story of Purim, and more specifically, implications of Esther. Now, it's possible that everything I'm going to say today is based upon a premise, and therefore it could be the premise is wrong, and therefore it could be I'm wasting your time. The Gemara or Chazal works with a couple of premises regarding the relationship between Esther and Mordechai. In source number one, the Gemara in Megillah says, Tana Mishum Rabbi Meir, Al Tikri Labat, when it says that he takes her as a daughter, don't read Labat, Ella Labayit. And Labayit, the connotation is that it means as a wife, that she became the woman of the house. In source number five, the Marsha says, Al Tikri Labat, Ella Labayit, Perish, Leisha, that he took her as a wife. It's going to be Alma Kariti Leishti Beiti, that I've called my wife my home. So the Gemara's starting point is something which is not written clearly in Megillat Esther, and that is the relationship between Mordechai and Esther. What was the real relationship, by the way? Right, everyone thinks it's uncle and niece. It doesn't say that. I don't know why everyone thinks it, but it says, it's no, it doesn't say Dahud. I know it says Dod Mordechai. You have to read the whole sentence. They were cousins. Okay, it wasn't, maybe it also, you get the feeling that Mordechai's older and Esther's younger. You can have whatever feelings you want, but it never says in any source that it was uncle and niece. What it does say, in fact, is that they were cousins. And the Gemara claims that they were cousins who became husband and wife. Now, that complicates the whole situation a little bit. Because, first of all, her entering into this quote-unquote beauty contest, and I hope that most of you realize it was not really a beauty contest. It was a different type of...
A slave contest.
A different type of contest. And why he would allow her to go if, in fact, they were married, the whole thing is somewhat problematic, but I'm not going to fight with that premise. At a certain point in the text, in source number two, when Mordechai tells Esther, you better do something about this, and it must be for a specific reason that you were put in this situation, she responds, and it's the first time in the entire text that she's proactive, and she gives orders, and she says what to do. She says, Lech knos et kol hayudim, go and gather all the Jews, hanimtzaim bishushan, vitsumu alai v'al tachlu v'al tishtu, fast and eat and drink shloshet yamim, laila v'yom, v'gamini v'narati atzum, and I and my girls will fast as well. Kenu v'chein avo el ha-melech ha-shelo kedat, and then I will go to the king without the proper way, without being invited. V'cha'asher avaditi avaditi. Now, what does that mean? As I'm lost, I'm lost. The pshat, the simple reading, the simple text of the Megillah, most likely is she's saying, you know, whatever happens, happens, which means my life is in peril at this point, everyone's life is in peril, she's going to go, and whatever happens, happens. The Gemara doesn't understand it that way. The Gemara is going back to its previous premise, which is that they're married. And the Gemara says, V'kasher avadati avadati, source number four, Kishem sha'avadati mi beit abba, kach oved mimcha. And as I've been lost to my father's home, now I'm going to be lost to you. What does that mean? Look at Rashi in source 3. Ad achshav, until this point, niv'alti ba'ones. Until this point, Esther says that every time she's been intimate with Achashverosh, there was a case of rape. That she was going there, she was taken against her will, and technically and legally Esther was raped. V'achshav mikan ve'elech mida'ati. And now I'm going to be going on my own, with my own knowledge, with my own will. Avadati mimcha, as I'm last lost to you, v'asura ani lacha. And at this point, she will have the status of a married Jewish woman who's knowingly having an affair. And as Rashi explains, the Eisha Yisrael, Shene and Sa, Muteret Labala, a wife of a Jewish man who's raped, is allowed to continue her relationship with her husband, Uveratzon, but if she goes willingly, Asur Labala, then she is prohibited to her husband. Now, again, let's take this premise, because what I really want to do today is to see how the case of Esther has been used in various responsa over the generations, which means as the Gemara's understanding is that Esther is a married woman who will be going in. And let's again be a little bit more sophisticated. Not the way that they teach it in Gan and every point in Jewish education past there. Namely that, I mean, the story is taken from what is certainly an R-rated story down to G or PG-rated story. When Esther, till this point, she's taken by the king. And it is a little bit ironic, and I'll give a little bit of commentary. Esther is there supposedly to be a replacement for Vashti. Vashti is an aristocratic woman. Vashti is the daughter of the king. Ahasuerus, according to the Gemara, was himself a man who led a coup, and he takes by force the kingship. He also takes the palace by force, and presumably he also takes Vashti by force. I would assume that the relationship between Vashti and Ahasuerus was not a loving relationship. I would assume it's one of power. Therefore, when he tries his power a little bit too much, what's the response? She basically says, drop dead and go to hell, and therefore becomes the hero of feminists who analyze the story. On the other hand, Esther, as I said, is taken. She goes to this whole contest very ambivalent. I cannot believe that she actually wants to win. She goes with ambivalence. And all the other women are probably very, very interested in winning, but she's not. So this standoffishness that Esther shows most likely is read by Ahasuerus as also being somewhat aristocratic. All the other women are throwing themselves and she doesn't. But now let's go back to the legal perspective. The legal perspective is, as far as she's looking at it, she is not complying at all. Everything is done to her. And again, she's passive all the way through in this part of the story, including her relations with Ahasuerus are passive. And therefore, on a halachic level, every single time she is taken, she is raped, that's the status. Now, when the Jewish people are in peril, and she has to go in, so what's she going to do at this point? Initially, when she was supposed to go in, she didn't take any makeup, and she didn't take any perfume, and she didn't ask for anything, at least. At this point, I would assume that her strategy is going to be very, very different. Now the future of the Jewish people rides upon her, and now she's going to have to do a very good job. So when she goes in to see the king, at this point, as I said, now let's go over to the R-rated version, she is going to have to try to seduce the king at this point. That's the connotation of what's going on. That's the way the Gemara is reading it. So the Gemara says now she's going to go in, now she's going to be initiating, till now she's been taken, now she's going to initiate, and that changes the halachic status. Now, I could raise at this point a very, very simple and perhaps disturbing question. Was she allowed to go in? Was this a proper thing to do? Or is this an improper thing to do? Is she to be considered somebody doing a very big mitzvah by behaving like this? Or is she be considered to be a notorious sinner by going in like this? Yes?
I have a question about the general halakha about adultery.
Right.
I never understood that if you had an affair, then you were, that was it, like kaput, you could never go back to your husband.
Okay.
I always understood that if you were, well, actually, I don't understand. Actually, I researched it. I never had reason to. But how could that be? I mean, all sorts of women have affairs, and then they go into counseling.
I can't believe it.
You know, your father or something.
I don't
and
believe.
Then they go back together.
I don't believe it. I can't believe that Jewish women have an affairs.
Is that the halacha?
No. I just said the halacha. You don't believe it. The halacha is you don't believe it. The halacha is bring proof. You're bragging. No, I'm being very serious about this. I'm being very serious on this point. There's a Mishnah towards the end of Gittin that says that originally, if a woman said that she had an affair, so then she couldn't remain with her husband. Then it goes, hold it. But maybe you like this idea. It says that's a very easy way to force a divorce. Just a woman has to go in. She met someone nice, and she says to her husband, "You know what? I had an affair." So what? So the mission then says, bring proof, bring witnesses, which means it's a legal issue. What I'm really getting at is that there's a difference between historical events and legal historical events. There's a difference between what happened historically versus legally what happened. In order to establish something as having happened, you need there to be some type of proof that something happened. So if you're asking me now for what will be the potential loophole that Rabbi will deal with when he's told in this situation, I'll give you a parallel. I'll give you a parallel situation. I'll give you a parallel situation. Because I heard on in the car on the way to shul, I heard the radio talking about something, a divorce of a girl who's 14 years old.
Okay.
It was in the paper. See, Baruch Hashem. So, therefore, no. So many years ago, I was teaching a class, and I mentioned the problem of what happens if a guy is kidding around and says to a girl, you know, Harei at Mukudeshetli, and these things happen. And right. And a girl came over to me afterwards and said to me that happened. And I was, this was probably 1989. It was 1989, 1990, so you can figure out how old I was at the time. But I was teaching, and I consulted with another rabbi, and he said, let me speak to her. So I brought her in, and he said, leave the room. Okay? So I went outside. Afterwards, he says, you weren't insulted, I asked you to leave. I said, no. He goes, do you know why? I said, yeah. He goes, why? He goes, I didn't want her to admit something in front of two witnesses. Okay? Because it's a difference between admit something, because again, legally, there's a difference between there being one witness who hears something versus two witnesses. Then the next process would be is that when this marriage, either fictitious or real, took place, were there witnesses? Did the witnesses think that they were sincere? Again, but you need, the fact that something happens doesn't always make a difference. You need witnesses in order to establish it as having happened. And that is going to come within some of the literature over here, but we'll see that there, over here, part of the Gemara says, well, everyone knows what happened with Esther. Esther b'Vahresya Haita. It was public knowledge, the relationship of Esther and Ahasuerus. So something being public knowledge is probably the same status of there being witnesses. So let's leave that for a moment. But to answer your question, yes. One affair can destroy a marriage.
Tshuva
is between you and God. Right.
Why don't all these misrevit get just go and have an affair and get two witnesses?
Because that's considered to be against the Ten Commandments, and but you know what? You're onto something there. It's very bad. It's very bad. But being that Torah law is that a man's allowed to technically have more than one wife, that does not demand a divorce. Let's yeah.
She was a woman in the Low East Side in an Orthodox community, mm-hmm. and her daughter was going to marry a yeshiva bracha.
Yeah.
And she came into, the night before the wedding, she came into Rav Moshe Feinstein and she said to him, when I was younger, I was married to somebody else in Europe, and I left, and I didn't get a divorce, I married somebody else, and this daughter mm-hmm. is the...
The result of this, right. So therefore, technically, she's...
So he said to her, I don't believe.
Right. Bring proof. You're bragging.
And then he said that it's a fact that Jewish women will not say anything against themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in other words, she was saying something against herself. That was, so he said, I don't believe you.
Right. But I'm saying Rav Moshe is relying over there on, you could say this is a loophole, but it's not really a loophole because you're talking about personal status, and personal status is based upon establishing facts, which sometimes is based upon witnesses and sometimes other criteria. But I'm just asking you to appreciate that there is not just a historical side of viewing what happened, but there's also a legal side of viewing what happened. Okay. Let's therefore proceed. As far as the basic question goes, you know, did Esther do the right thing or do the wrong thing? Let's skip a little bit through the Talmudic sources. And I don't know why these things are upside down here. And let's go to source number 12. A question that comes up in the 17th century. Shelotu Tshuvot Shvut Yaakov. Page number 3. Sheila. Here's the question. Ma'aseh shahaya kachaya. the story that transpired, this is what happened. Siyasha b'nei Adam shehalchu b'derech. There were a group of people traveling along the way, v'chad mihem v'ishto imo, and one of the people, his wife, was traveling with him. V'yihila et erev, and as evening fell, v'holchu l'malon echad l'samuch liyar, they go in order to, either it literally means a malon, like a hotel, or more likely it means a place, a camp to rest. They go to rest on the side of the forest. Umatsusham anashe bli'al, these heathen, godless men come, rotzchanim, murderous men, shehimim mu'adim laharog nefashot al iskei mamon, they're the kind of people that we kill because of money. Ukashera shetzaratan tzara, when the woman realized what kind of situation they were in, that they were all going to be killed, I mean, you take the money and you leave no witnesses, that is the clean way of doing such things. Amdu alein larogotam, v'lo sham'u b'tchanu aleihim al nafshotam. They were going to kill them, and they ignored their pleas. Az hifkira atzma ha'isha, biratzon ba'ala Yisrael. And then this woman, she went, and she seduced one of the robbers with her husband's agreement. Permission, I didn't want to say. It doesn't say. It says consent. It says baratzon ba'ala. The ayudei kain hitzila otam. And by doing this, she saved all the people. V'achshav ba ba'ala l'shol I ishto muteret lo, kevin shenaset mitzad ones, and he wants to know whether she is allowed to remain with him because she did this. And again, let's pay attention to his words. They just gave up on me. Mitzad ones, ritzicha. She did it against her will because she was afraid of being killed. Birtzona, and she did this willfully. Ve'esha Yisrael, shene'ensa, and a Jewish woman who's raped, Muteret laba'ala, is allowed to her husband. Which means what he's really asking over here, is this a case of rape or not? He says, or maybe she's not allowed. O yikabel schar al haprisha v'ketzet yinheg ima. Which means, well, maybe they need to separate and she... Now it's interesting, because there's really two questions. The case we all understand, correct? And there's really two questions to be posed over here. One question is, did she do the right thing or did she do the wrong thing? The second question to be posed over here is, either way, can she remain with her husband or not? Which means there is a second and a half question, which is probably, you know, interpretation of the second question, is this a question of rape or is this not a question of rape? Now, this is obviously something that we could debate. I would say that this is under duress. I would even say that this is under extreme duress. But the problem with saying that it's rape is, aside from the fact that it may not be, the problem is that you then will create an incredible slippery slope. Which leads me back to another point. Why exactly would a situation of rape be any different from a case of not rape? And that may sound like a simple, like a stupid question even. First of all, there's a pasuk in the Torah that says it. Ula na'ara al taset davar. Right? She didn't do anything wrong. Okay, so if you insist on being so sophisticated, let's go back now to our Talmudic passages. Source number 6. First of all, there is the Gemara that says that there are three things. If somebody points a gun to your head and says, do, that you should let yourself be killed rather than do them. What are those three? Gili arayot, shfichat dam avodah zarah, which means sexual sins, idolatry, and murder. Everything else in the Torah, someone points a gun at you, you're allowed to break. The Gemara is actually, there's a sharper passage of the Gemara than that one, and that's on that's source 6, the Gemara in Pesachim. It says, ki ata ravin amra b'yochanan b'kol mitrapin. You're allowed to use any kind of medical procedure to save your life. Chutz mi avodah zarah gilarayt v'shvichat damim. Except for these three, which means if you're in a life and death situation and you can save your life by doing one of these three things, you can do all of them except for these three. You can't save your life by doing one of these three things. So the same way, if someone points a gun at your head and says, commit murder, I'll kill you, you have no right to commit murder or sexual sins or idolatry. The same thing, if your life is in danger and you can save yourself by one of these three things, you can't do it. And by the way, the extreme example of that is a Gemara in source number 9. It says, Amar of Yehuda, Amar Rav, Ma'aseba Adam Echad Shenatan Einav Be'isha Achad. Rav Yehuda told the name of Rav, there was once a man who noticed a particular woman, Ve'la Libo Tina, and he was consumed with a passion for this woman. Uba'u Vishalula Rafim. And they came, and the rabbis and asked the doctors, for Amru Ein Lo Takana Ad Shetibal. Nothing will save him unless he has relations. I don't know if Kupat Cholim covers this, or if, or if he wrote a prescription for this man. But if you want to know the way the story ends up, the Gemara says, Amru Chachamim Yamut. So let him die. What's the big problem? The Altivello. You know what? So then the Gemara says, okay, let's get a compromise. Tamod lefanav aruma. Maybe she can just stand in front of him naked, and maybe that will help. So what did the Gemara say? Yamut va'altim lefanav aruma. Let him die. What are you talking about? Tisaper imam achrei hageder. She should speak to him from behind the mechitza. Yamut va'altim tisaper imam. The Gemara says, like, what are you talking about? Again, by the way, even though you can say that as we keep on going, we're getting to perhaps real Gilei Arayot, but the Gemara doesn't even question if she's married or not married, which is also very interesting. The Gemara eventually says, maybe they should marry. And again, the rabbi's answer all the way through this is, by the way, the response to marriage is marriage wouldn't help, because it's, and it quotes the verse, that stolen waters are sweetest. And come on with your own wife. He says, no, that's not going to heal anything. But the Gemara's response over here is all the way through, let the guy die. I mean, why? Because you cannot use Gilei Arayot to save someone's life. Now if I go back and I look at our story and I ask the question, so that's really was the question that you asked. There are three things you have to give your life for. So I'm going to ask again, did this woman do the right thing? Did she do the wrong thing? Could she go back to her husband or not?
But he was using somebody else's Gilei Arayot to save his life. Mm-hmm. He was imposing himself on somebody else. He was dragging her down.
Right.
In the case of the woman, yeah, the only person she was actually harming was herself.
Okay, and therefore.
And her husband.
But still, she is doing Gilei Arayot.
But she saved other people. Is it really Gilei Arayot? I was wondering, is it really?
So if you want, so,
I mean, it's not technically Arayot.
Oh no! A married. A married. You don't know his religion or not. A married woman that is still one of the Arayot. Okay, the technical definition in English, incest, does not translate to Gilei Arayot. It's all the list of Arayot. One of the Arayot is someone who's married with somebody other. So it is technically Gilei Arayot, even though you may not feel. There is another point, and that goes back to what I started to raise before. Why exactly would a victim of rape, she should have to fight to the point of death? And the Gemara, and the Torah says that's not the case. Again, we're not going to debate that point. The Torah says it's not the case. The Torah says a victim of rape is a victim. If she's a victim, and therefore she didn't do anything wrong. So how on the one hand can I say she didn't do anything wrong, and on the other hand over here, well, you can say that's because she's forced, but I can still say that this woman is in a very precarious situation and feels that she's forced. The Gemara raises this question regarding Esther. Again, there's two parts of the Esther story, one before and one after. And the Gemara says as follows, source number 7. V'ha Esther v'ferhes yahavai. The story of Esther was well known. It was public knowledge. It was common knowledge what happened there. The Gemara answers, Amar Abaye, Esther karka olam haita. Now, what does it mean over here by karka olam? Look at Rashi. Karka olam hi. What it means is passivity, passive. Eina ose ma'aseh. She didn't do anything. Hu asaba ma'aseh. So what the Gemara wants to say over here, or does say, and this is the conclusion of the Gemara, is that there's a difference between a woman having had sex done to her, which would be the classic case of rape, versus a case where somebody initiates contact, which would be really the way that we understand what happened with Esther. Or for that matter, that would take us back to this case over here. Meaning, if in this whole story everything was the same except for one little difference, and that one little difference was instead of the woman approaching the thief approaching her and raping her and says, you know what, I'm going to let you all live now. That would not be the same case. So that's the problem over here. Then I can go back and read this Gemara and says, Esther karka olam haita. Esther was completely passive. This woman was completely passive. Well, what's the problem? This woman in this story was not completely passive. She initiated the contact. She attempted to seduce. She succeeded in seducing. And she saved her life. So again, did she do a wonderful mitzvah by saving herself and others, as you remind me? Or do you say that no, that she did a terrible thing? Even if I say that she did a wonderful thing and saved many lives and did a big mitzvah, can she remain with her husband and can she not remain with her husband? Those are the questions. Yeah.
Is there a difference between views pertaining to kings and queens and views pertaining to common people?
They certainly think there are. I have no reason to believe that there's any difference over here between why king or queen should be different in this. In this particular case, the Shvut Yaakov.
Excuse me. There is a sort of in medieval literature in some of the schut of the lord of the manor to take whoever he wants to take.
Yes.
And if that woman happened to be married, would that make the difference?
No, she's taken. She's raped. That it's being taken.
For sure.
You're right. Right. That. I would hope. I mean, that's a whole different problem. Yeah.
Is that just because somebody's Jewish and somebody's not?
I mean, in terms of the male.
Yeah.
There is an argument that Rabbeinu Tam puts forward that there is a difference. Most people don't accept that difference. As far as I recall, there is an opinion, but I don't believe it's ultimately accepted. The Shvut Yaakov, let's go back to page 3 and see how he negotiates with this. Tshuva, hinei l'cha'ora, it seems at face value, din zeh pashut v'aruch l'faneinu b'tshuvat maharik. It seems it's straightforward, and he quotes an earlier source, the Maharik, and he writes, "Shekatav zelashono tafilo hechad she'ein kan nidud avera bebilata kedei latzil kol Yisrael kamo Yael eshet chaver hakini veEster shem tzia et atzma la'achashverosh b'shah shelo hayat tova." Even when there's a case where there's absolutely not even the smallest aspect of sin, like the case of Yael eshet chaver, and the case of Esther. And by the way, if you think about it, we can also distinguish between those two cases. They're not necessarily the same case. Where she goes and she goes in when she's not invited, kadeshi it avela, that he will desire her, vihe noach lehit patot, laasot la bakashata, and she does try to seduce him so that she would have her will fulfilled. Afilu hachi ne esra amordechai ba'ala adkan lashono. So, nonetheless, Esther could not remain with Mordechai, which is what we saw from the Gemara. Which means, what's he starting to tell us? He's answering both our questions very straightforward. What are his answers? One, even in a case where a woman did nothing wrong and did a great mitzvah, and we have precedent like that, namely Ya'el and Esther, nonetheless, she cannot go back to her husband. As I said, we're working with that assumption because that's what's being worked with in all of these cases. Again, I'm not dealing really with Megillat Esther as much as the ramifications or the perceived ramifications of this. The Maharik, I didn't put a number by it, but it's on page 4 in the middle of page. This goes back for you in terms of his question is, Vasher Sha'al Maharil, a woman who had an affair willingly, right? She didn't think that it was not allowed. She thought that this was allowed. I mean, is this considered to be an accident and so on? And so that's the question that he deals with. So.
Well, no, because that's the contemporary question, because most people, I would imagine, are not aware.
No. They're aware it's not allowed. They're not aware of the consequences. One second. But being aware that it's not allowed, over here, the question is, what if you don't know that it's not allowed?
Say we're talking about the 60s, when the prevailing culture was different, and people really didn't think it wasn't allowed.
No, they knew it wasn't allowed. They didn't care. Okay, I know. You're saying if a person's brought up in a society that they don't, again, the way you asked the question, I didn't like it, because you didn't say they don't know that it's not allowed, they just didn't know the ramifications. They said, oh, if I would have realized the ramifications, then I wouldn't have done that. That it's not allowed, that it says it in the Ten Commandments, that they know it says it. They just don't know what the ramifications are. So is not knowing the punishment for a crime, you know, someone gets brought up. Right, right.
Okay, let's get differently.
Say you're in a commune and it's free love.
No, it's not free love, it's free sex, but go ahead.
Okay, you have an open, you have what you consider are calling an open marriage.
Right.
You know, you've created your own rules for marriage
and okay.
You don't understand that it's not allowed.
Right.
Is that Meshuggah? So it doesn't.
If you really want to push and you keep rephrasing it, you could eventually get into this his case. So you want to know what he answers? He says, it also seems to me, it's not based upon if you know it's allowed or not. Like you didn't know it wasn't allowed. And he goes and quotes the case of Esther. So what happens by Esther? Even though she didn't do anything, let's read it further. Ki Esther lo asta shum isur, which means, even if you're going to keep on pushing and say, okay, I didn't know it wasn't allowed. So in a case where you didn't know, so therefore it's by accident, what's the ramification? He says, Esther didn't do anything wrong. There isn't even an aspect of a sin. Ela mitzvah rabba asta. Esther did a great mitzvah. Lahatzila kol Yisrael, to save the entire Jewish people. And you should know that that's really the case. And just threw one more thing into this. When she walked in, she had Ruach HaKodesh at that point. And of course, how can you possibly say that Esther had Ruach HaKodesh and did something which is wrong, which means he's not playing that. He's not playing nice. Why is he not playing nice? Because he's totally convinced that Esther did the right thing. And I can go back again and ask you, well, how do I know that Esther did the right thing? He says, it has to be that Esther did the right thing. We call our daughters Esther. I mean, what are you talking about? Of course she did the right thing. Yeah. No, they all assume that. All these tshuvot, if you start going through them, none of the tshuvot, either lenient or strict, none of them go back and argue on that point. They all accept the point. And I'll be, again, if you want to go back to the Esther story, you're right. You can say it never said they were really married, and let's save Esther's reputation that way. And at the bottom two lines of the page, it says, "V'kolshkein b'hida Esther v'afilu hachin esra amurdechai ba'ala mishum oto ma'aseh shahaya baratzon v'halo dvarim kal v'chomer u'ma'hatim d'lohaya b'dvar shum nidnu avira ela adira b'mitzvah ka'avda v'afilu hachin esra amurdechai ba'ala isha shizinta tachet ba'ala lo kolshkein shiasura alav." What did he say? He says that if in the case of Esther, where the Gemara considers them to be married, and Esther definitely did a big mitzvah, but nonetheless had to separate from Mordechai, in a case of a woman who didn't know it was not allowed, so what's that called? That's called shogeg. What would be the law if the Beit HaMikdash was around, you did something b'shogeg, you bring a korban b'shogeg. So she needs kapara, but does she have to separate from the husband? Certainly has to separate from the husband. Why? Because she did something which was not allowed, and therefore it's no better than Esther. So again, I'm showing you that in this case of the woman who didn't know, the Maharik brings Esther as the discussion. Over here, in the case of the Shvut Yaakov, he brings Esther as the precedent. What's his conclusion? Both of them conclude clearly that a great mitzvah was performed over here. Along the way in the Shvut Yaakov, he also quotes someone called the Beit Yaakov. The Beit Yaakov you have on your last page. She'ela lamitet. No, no, but she was allowed to bring the korban.
I don't understand this philosophically.
Okay.
It's almost impossible for a woman to get her divorce. impossible for the woman to stay with the husband. It is impossible to stay with the husband if she makes a mistake.
We need a strict. We need. In the perfect world, what do you need? You need a much stronger Beit Din who has real sanctions, who can force the husband. Yeah, which means on the one hand, we have the old... Three rabbis should be able to force it. On the one hand, we have the old-time laws, but we have a very diluted Beit Din. If the Beit Din had the power that they once had, then these things would not be happening.
Okay, well, let me rephrase that. If marriage is so sacred, then yes. Anything, you'll go to great lengths to
right.
protect it.
Right.
What is the seed of this sin that makes it so great that this like one mistake will blow it apart? Like, what is it about Gilui Ariyot that's so powerful here that there's no going back?
I can only theorize what the Torah is saying, because theoretically, you can have a situation of trading partners and a situation of multiple partners and all this, and all this is avoided by saying that no. That if a woman has relations with someone else, then that terminates the relationship. And by the way, even as somebody mentioned before, that if the husband divorces the wife and then she goes with someone else, and then they come back, you know, that's also not allowed. Yeah.
Isn't there another issue that if they have a child, if the woman has a child, so it's already mamzerus, and then it's
In which case?
If she has a relationship with when she's married.
Yes, the child would be mamzer. Right. The child would be mom's. So you could again philosophically you can say that the issue of motherhood is important. Let's look at the Shvut Yaakov. His question is also the Beit Yaakov. Sorry, is also an interesting question. It's on the last page, the one that you can't read. I blew it up. 134%. She'ela lamitet kol damrin and eshet Yisrael shenen samu teret labala. In that we say that a Jewish woman. Somebody who's married to Yisrael, it means as opposed to a Kohen, who was raped, is allowed to go back to her husband. Could eat the be'evin ezer simin lamed hey? Lamed. Hechada habol hu ones, they're talking about she'imu alav lahargo im lo yivol eshet Yisrael. Because what about if you turn the case around? What about if the rapist has a gun to his head and he's told, if you don't have relations with a Jewish woman, I'm going to kill you? V'hi eina anusa, kigon shenitratzeit lebol kidei lahatzilo min hariga. And she wants to be a good Samaritan, and she says, no, I'll do this to save.
He's not a rapist. He's also villainous.
He's under duress.
Right.
Right. So he has a gun to his head, and he's told, you will be killed unless you have relations with a married woman. A married woman volunteers and says, I am willing. I know. I know. Can we read the question again? I'll read it again. Hechad haboel hu onus she'imu alav, he was threatened, lahargo, to be killed, im lo yivol eshet Yisrael, if he doesn't have relations with a Jewish married woman, v'hi eina anusa, but she's not being raped, kagon dehitratzeit lebol, that she agrees to have relations with kedei lahatzilo min hariga. To save him from being killed. Im ha'isha asara labala b'kai gavna olo. Is this woman allowed to return to her husband or not?
No. Well, Esther saved an entire people if she wasn't allowed to return to her husband.
Right.
And this woman's just saving one guy.
So the
it doesn't have to be her.
The Beit Yaakov has... He does incredible gymnastics over here. Because he wants to argue, but by the way, you all know that there are three things you have to give up your life for, right? What if you didn't give up your life? And you broke whatever law that you weren't allowed to break. Are you guilty of that thing that you broke, or are you forced? Someone had a gun to your head, and you broke that law. Let's make it easy right now. You did Avodah Zarah. You don't believe in it. Someone put a gun at your head. You're supposed to give up your life. Yes, you did Avodah Zarah. Now what? How do I look at the Avodah Zarah that you did? Was that ones? Were you forced into that? Yes, you were forced. Are you guilty? You are guilty of not being mekadesh shem shamayim. You're guilty of not sanctifying God's name. But in terms of the particular thing that you've done, you were forced. It was against your will. So he wants to use that argument over here that the man is supposed to be mekadesh shem shamayim, but as far as the actual sex, he's being forced. If he's being forced, so then. He wants to claim that there's no sin. If there's no sin, so then how can the woman be guilty of a sin? The whole thing, I apologize, is ridiculous. I can't even begin to understand where he's coming from in this, and I haven't seen, but the Shvut Yaakov quotes him along the way, because along with the Maharik, he's somewhat sympathetic. Even though, again, the Shvut Yaakov's conclusion is, what? That you can't go back. Let's look at the Noda de Behuda. We'll find it. I didn't put numbers by any of these. Okay, on page number 5. The Noda de Behuda.
If a married man does have relations with another woman,
yes.
Right. Is that considered gigo erot for him, or is gigo erot for him?
For both. If one person's guilty of gilui erot, so is the other, which is really the basis of what he's trying to do. If he's not really guilty, then how can she be guilty? That's what he's trying. Generally, yes. That's not. That may not be gilui erot.
But is it for him?
No. It has to be gilui erot. Has to be on both sides. Look at the Noda Behuda. Mikol makom guf din zeh shemutar le'eit, page 5. Shemutar le'eshet ish l'znot beratzon kedei latzil nefashot eino Torah. He goes, this is not acceptable. And he then says, V'lo yashar ba'ini ma'asher iti be'ez ha'tshuva. And it's not correct what I saw in a tshuva. And ulafi shani la'et ata b'kfar. He's away in the mountains. He says, V'lo uchal l'skor be'ez ha'tshuva. I don't remember where I saw it. Ukibidoma ani, it seems to me, shehi tshuva Beit Yaakov. So he got confused between the two Yaakovs. He said, I think it was the Beit Yaakov, but in the parentheses here, someone added in that it was really the Shvut Yaakov. Where he tells the case, ba'anashim v'nashim shaholchu b'derech v'kama leim archilistim echad b'sadeh m'chavura listim. These groups of robbers came over, shekamotu laharoget kulam to kill all them, v'kama isha achat mehem, and one of the women stood up, isha yifat tohar. By the way, as he tells the story, she just became beautiful. I guess we're getting ready for the screenplay. And so, isha yifat tohar ma'od. Ma'od, an exceedingly beautiful woman. V'hitchila lehishtadel ma'ish rosh ha'listim, which also wasn't clear in the first story, and she hits on the chief robber, bidvarim ad shepititu b'chalkat l'shana shenit avela, until by using the words that she said, she seduced him, that he wanted her, v'nivala lo b'ya'ar min atzad, v'yedekin hitzila et ba'ala im kol nefashot, and therefore she saved her husband and all the other people. Upasak b'tshuva he, in that tshuva that I saw, sheshapir avda, he said that she did the right thing. Umitzvah rabba avda, and she did a great mitzvah. Sheshadalto l'zeh l'hatzil nefashot. She did this to save lives. Rak she'afal pikei na'asra al ba'ala v'hivi raya mi Esther. Nonetheless, he said that she did a great sin, but she can't go back to husband. He says it's parallel to Esther. He takes this apart. He goes, va'ani omer, next line, Kevin she'amra chazal b'chol mitrapin, you can heal yourself for everything except for avodah zarah v'gilui erot v'shufuchat damim. And came k'shem she'ein mitrapin b'shalosh averot halalu kach ein matzilin behem nefashot. He says this is black and white in the Gemara. You can't save lives by doing this. What are you talking about? But by the way, what's going to be the problem now if he says that this is wrong? Yeah. Then how do you justify Esther? Which means the strong, if there was a strong way of defending these other cases, what was it? You had precedent of Esther. But he's saying,
well, there's a little difference. Esther was married to Ahasuerus, and she couldn't get out of it. She was the queen.
You know what? According to the Gemara, she tried that also. But that's why she was laying on the bed. She said, I slept with one pig, I'll sleep with the other pig. What does it make a difference after a while?
Was she married to
Ahasuerus? Yeah, but No, you know what? Again, I'm gonna say this one time. If they were married, it makes no sense to me that Mordechai just didn't give her a get beforehand and solve this whole problem. I've asked many rabbis this. Can you explain to me why? Nobody knows why. I'm just gonna say this is the case as presented to us, but you're going to have, again, assuming that's the case, and let's not change the premise over here, all of them are working with the premise that Esther is married to Mordechai, and therefore Esther had to have done the right thing. So they just have to find the right legal explanation for why, or justification for why Esther did the right thing. One second. The Noda Behuda starting off and saying, what are you talking about? This is open and shut in the Gemara that you cannot save your life or other lives by doing such a thing. So he says, what are you talking about? He goes on to say, Va'onis derachman asharia. But in a case of rape, that's different. Why? Be'isha shakarka olami, where a woman is completely passive. Hainu, shehi anusa al guf habia. She's forced in the actual sexual act. Aval hecha she'ena anusa, where a woman's not being forced, al guf habia. Va'adiraba, the opposite is true. He mishtadelet lezeh, latzil nefashot. She is trying to do this. Lo mikri karka olam. You can't call that passivity. Ve'eshet ish. Isha v'ish shavim, and then the law of a man and a woman are both the same. V'tarog v'al ta'avar. You should let yourself be killed, and you shouldn't break this law. But by the way, I could argue with him. If you want to get overly technical, you could argue with him and say that she seduced him, but when it came to the actual sexual act, she was completely passive. You could. It's a little harder, but he doesn't really allow that. He goes v'Esther shani. Esther's different. Why? Now, let's see how the Noda Behuda is going to defend Esther and her reputation. By the way, there is one source that says that that they made a golem that looked just like Esther, and the golem was with her. Again, if you want to get to crazy explanations on how we save Esther's reputation, that's probably as good as it gets, but as bad as it gets. But he doesn't say that. He says instead that Esther is different. Why? Because Esther was going to save the entire Jewish people. Do you like this answer?
No.
Why?
One life is...
Yeah, what's the difference? Where exactly draw the line? All the people, yes, 100,000, no, 100,000, yes, 10, no, 10, yes, 5, no. Where do you draw the line? If the thing is not allowed, then why should it be allowed in this case?
No other halacha makes between one and
right. Right. Then he goes on to say, and by the way, Ya'el would be a little bit harder to explain also. I don't. Yeah, and Ya'el, on top of that, well, she wasn't saving the entire Jewish people.
Right, so
look,
it's not just many, it's all.
Right. Then he goes on to say, V'sham haya b'harat Mordechai u'beit dino. So now we just put Mordechai on a beit din and says, Mordechai is beit din, so this was right. And maybe they had Ruach HaKodesh also. So by the time we got the Ruach HaKodesh in here, so how are we going to argue anymore? But you see the Noda Behuda is having a hard time to justify Esther because he's convinced that the action is not allowed. I'll tell you one more case. One more case is the following case in the Binyan Tzion. Binyan Tzion was written by Rav Yaakov Ettlinger, lived around 150 years ago. He writes as follows: Sheila, hinei ze yamim lo kavir, bama sela fanaya shekol shamer tatzilenu shtei aznav. Whoever case happened, whoever hears it, the two ears will ring. Bechad kfarim omdim tachat gali, in one of the cities underneath my auspices. By the way, this is not him writing. He's writing the question that was written to him. Darim sham Yehudim or shnei Yehudim v'darkam lilech al mischar. So there are some Jews that live there, and what they do is they go away for business. Umalach eziyamim v'neshotayim levadam bebayit im b'neihim uvnotayim u'mishartayim. The wives stay home with the children and with the servants. V'yayom kasher yatzah ish kederko lemischar. And one day the husband goes off for work, and he'll be away for a while. V'ishachad ba mimidinat Poland. And a Jew comes in from Poland. I don't know what you think about Polish Jews, but a Jew comes in from Poland. Ubigadav kruim, and he has torn clothing. V'yavakesh me'a isha makom lalun, and he asks of this woman for a place to stay. V'isha shahaita tznua biyoter kol yameh, this woman who was very modest, aval yirata kiselta, which means she wasn't necessarily the brightest of women. Rachma alav had compassion for him, v'nanad lo makom lalun, and gave him a place to sleep, v'gam le'achol u'lishtot, to eat and drink. Amnan ha'oreach ahu lo achal etzla shum davar min achai, gam lo shata mashkeh rak mayim. He wouldn't eat anything. Just to help you a little bit, he's trying to give the impression that he's some kind of hidden tzaddik. It gets a little clearer. U'kehena asa ma'aseh prishut v'siguf, atzmo b'sigufim kashim. He did all kinds of things which are difficult on the body. Kol hayom yashav b'chedro misugar v'seifi biyado. He sat all day in the room with the door closed with a book in his hand. Gami de'layla b'layla ad chatzot. Till midnight v'acha kachaya mitonin al-churban beit elokeinu. He would get up and say tikkun chatzot. U'sheshechav lo shechav al amitah. When he lay down, he wouldn't lie down on the bed. V'safsal or on a couch. Ki im ala aretz v'avanim tachat rosho. And he lay down on the ground with rocks under his head. U'mideyom b'yomo taval otzmo b'mayim karim shel nahar. And every day he would get up early and go and immerse himself in a mikveh, which was the local river. Be'et HaKor, Pa'amim Be'et HaKor, which was really at times quite cold, Kein Nahag Be'et HaIsha Miyom Achad Parshat Truma, Ad Shabbat Kodesh Parshat Titzaveh. Okay, so it's right this time of year. I'm sure it wasn't all that warm at that time. Amnam Bilel Shabbat Achar Gamasu Adatan, Friday night after the meal, Hatinokim Marshitei Abayit Amdu Kula Me'al Shulchan, the servants and the children all got up, V'holchu Lishon L'cheder Acheret, and went to sleep in another room, V'ish HaRamai, which is our first hint that the man is a Ramai. How do you translate Ramai? I would deceptive man. Odenu Yoshev Ala Shulchan Ima Isha Levado. He's sitting alone with the woman at the table. V'nichnas Ita B'dvarim, and he starts to speak to her. Ad Shisha'ala Oto. She finally asks him, Mi Ata? U'me'ayin Tavo Va'ana Telech. Who are you? Where do you come from? And where are you going? Because there was a theme at that time of various rabbis who apparently felt they were treated too nicely in their hometown, that they would go and dress up in different clothing and go to other places that they would be treated terribly, as the poor were often treated, because they thought this was good for an ego, for their ego to get beat up a little bit. I don't have this problem. I'm not treated too good. The Anala, what did he end up answering? Anala Shlucha Derachmana Ana, which literally means, I am on a mission from God. Ushmi Eliyahu Anavi, and my name is Eliyahu. Ve'etachai Enochi Mivakesh, and I'm looking for my brethren. L'kabetzotam, to gather them, me'arba kanfot ta'aretz, from the four corners of the earth. Ve'ein megalina davar elalutznu in. I'm only allowed to tell this to very modest people. Ve'isha l'rov sichluta, and this woman with her enormous intelligence, he mean alo, she believed him. She went to sleep in her room, which was nearby. And now you get one for Ramai to Ocher. What's an Ocher?
A hateful person.
Hateful person. This leech. Hanal, Odenu Yoshev al Makomo, Va'ayin Besefer. He's still sitting there looking in his book. Ad Chatzot Halayla till midnight. Ul'acha Chatzot Amad, and after midnight he got up. Va'alach La'at al Etzbaot. Raglov. He got up and he went on his tiptoes. It's written beautiful, right? It's written great. El Hamita Asher Isha Shachva Shama, to the room where the woman is lying. V'irota, and he woke her up, Mishinta, from her slumber. V'deberi Le, and he said to her as follows. Hine alachti mikitzei ha'aretz v'atkatzei ha'aretz. I've gone from one end of the world to the other. V'lo matzati tzadeket kamotech. I've not found a righteous woman like you. Asher hi ru'uya letzeit mimena Mashiach, who's worthy to have Mashiach come from her. Ach hamniyahi, the problem is, mitzad ba'aleich, from your husband. She'enu hagun l'kach. He's not so righteous. L'zot nishlachti min hashamayim, I've been sent from heaven. L'shachev otach, to have relations with you. Uke'et chai, and as I live, I swear, till di ben you will have a son, v'hu ye Mashiach ben David, and he will be the Mashiach. V'yegalat Yisrael, and he will redeem Israel. V'zel lach ha'ot, I'm going to give you a sign. Ki Eliyahu Anochi, for that I'm Eliyahu. Hinei b'yom gimel, on this coming Tuesday, abalein l'tova, la'achar hi perdimi itach, after I leave. Im tiftach et petach ha'teva, if you open up the drawer, asher omeid po b'chedr, in this room, mishkavech, in your bedroom, timtza sham otzer matmun rav arbama ot dukatun shel zahav, you will find 400 gold coins. Ach b'tnai, on condition, shelo tiftach ha'teva kodim zman ha'mugbal, that you don't open it up before the appropriate time. By the way, if Elio ever approaches you and tells you such a thing, tell him you want to see cash, okay? Kodiber Eleha Hanoef. At this point, he just now raised a level. Now he's called the adulterer. Ad Shepita Vitimeota, till he seduced and defiled her. Pa'amayim. Twice, Bilel Shabbat u'Motzai Shabbat, again on Friday night and again on Saturday night. U'v'yom Rishon Teremalut Hashachar, Sunday morning before daybreak. Barach Hanoef Misham V'lo Nadam Mekomo. He was not to be seen again. This is a true story. I can even want me to say something worse. It could be one of our great great grandmothers. Okay, I'll stop. But this is a true story. There are a number of tshuvot. There are a number of tshuvot about this case.
What?
Thank you. Anyway, what did this woman do? The Eshet Ksilot Hanal, this woman, Chashalach tov the ba'ala. She said, you know what? I better tell my husband. Sheshuv meher lebeito. He doesn't have to work anymore. We have 400 gold coins. Vasher hitzliach Hashem et beito b'madmon gadol. That God has blessed their home with a great treasure. Va'ishamayla, the man, you know, listened to her. V'yashav b'yom gimel and came back on Tuesday. V'tiftacha isha tateva. You'll never guess what happened. V'lo matzam u'ma mihamatmon. And didn't find anything. Asher amar her no'ef. Uvrotoki sheker b'piv. And she realized that he had lied. Tsa'aka, she screamed. Ubachta b'mar nafsha. And she cried bitterly. V'siprela balat kol toiva asher sara shazeh. And she told everything that this wicked man had done. V'dibra alibo. And she spoke to his heart. Halolo b'merit v'bo ma'alasiti. I didn't do this to rebel from you or to try to get away from you. Zot sadi b'marim. Let the heavens be my witness. Kavanati haya l'shem shamayim. I did this because I thought that's what God wanted me to do. V'lo nef haya ishma us muhuar. Besides, the man was disgusting and ugly. Me'od. Uma yisitanu liznotimo. And what would have brought me to do this with him? Amnon abalo shaket. And he didn't know what to do. And that's the question that comes to Rav Ettlinger. He goes through case of Esther, because let's just go into this woman's mind for a second. You say she's stupid. Great. She was doing this. Gullible. She was doing this to save the entire Jewish people. Esther went in to save the entire Jewish people. What exactly is going to be the difference? By the way, the first thing that he brings in when he analyzes the case is he says, why exactly should we believe her? That's the first thing. Maybe this is fiction. Why exactly should we believe her is the first thing that he does. He then goes on and he eventually says, I think this woman was raped. Right. And Rav Yaakov Ettlinger opens up the door for what he calls a psychological rape. He wants to consider her raped, and he wants to allow her to remain with her husband in this particular case. In the end, he says, if there are two other rabbis who agree with me, then I'm willing to give that ruling. But again, in all the cases we saw today, I don't know. I don't know how this, because again, in the next thing, the rabbi writes back to him and they argue about something. I don't know how this story ended up, but he was willing, and that's not an easy position to take. Again, we understand why he did it. In this case where she's manipulated, you know what, let's make a distinction between this case and the previous case. The case of the people traveling along the way, she's under extreme duress. What's the duress? She'll be killed. What's the halacha? The halacha is you're not allowed to do something. Again, that's what I would assume. That's the no debut's position. The Shvut Yaakov and perhaps the Beit Yaakov, the Maharik, they would say that no, that Esther is the precedent. And if Esther did the right thing, then they did the right thing. And you shouldn't make any distinction between saving one person and saving a lot of people. The no debut, again, what's their whole proof really based on? It's really based upon Esther. The no debut, on the other hand, says, I don't see where you can say that. It's a case of duress. And duress, that this is one of the things the Gemara says you're not allowed to do. If you're going to allow sexual relations for duress, so, you know, go and start defining duress now. One person's duress is that, you know, that they're very, very poor and they need money. Another person's duress could be they want to buy a new car. I mean, there are many, many gradations of duress, and that becomes, you know, this slippery slope, and morally it's going to be very difficult to defend. But again, this tshuva of the Beit Yaakov is particularly interesting, because now you go back that Esther's there to save the entire Jewish people in her twisted mind. And again, you can call her gullible, but what does she think? She thinks she's a character in a biblical story. Right? She thinks that Eliyahu is being sent to her, just like Eliyahu who shows up in other places, and Eliyahu is coming and saying, this is what God wants. Now, she's wrong? Of course she's wrong. Does he play with her mind? Of course he plays with her mind. Did she have relations with a man other than her husband? Yes. But again, this is what's interesting. The Binyan Tzion is willing to say, again, just like Esther was there to save the whole Jewish people, she thought she was saving the whole Jewish people, so therefore it becomes the correct thing to do, even though she's wrong. Correct. When you look at the Noda Behuda, it's circular reasoning. But she wants to say at the end that the psychological manipulation is to be considered, and therefore he's willing to say that she can stay with her husband. As I said from the beginning, it could be that Esther and Mordechai were never married. It could be that all of this is completely not correct, but nonetheless, the case of Esther does serve as a precedent for all kinds of interesting cases, and I showed you a handful of them today. Yes.